Okay, I'd like to call the meeting to order. For the record, show that all board members are present. The Pledge of Allegiance, Trustee Criddle, could you please lead us in the pledge?
Yes. Please stand. Salute, pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you.
Thank you. To all our listeners joining by phone tonight, please note that you will be muted for a majority of the meeting. If you would like to unmute yourself to participate in the discussion, please press star 6 on your phone. Please note that the meeting host may mute or unmute you during the meeting and that an announcement on your phone will let you know when that happens. Thank you. We do have a couple items to announce out of closed session. The first one, the board by unanimous roll call vote passed resolution 2020-21/17, release non-reelection of temporary, including probationary oath, certificated employees, and authorizes the superintendent or his designee to issue the proper notices. Second one, the board by unanimous roll call vote passed resolution 2020-21/18, non-reelection of probationary certificated employees and authorizes the superintendent or his designee to issue the proper notices. Next we have comments from board members. Mr. Davis.
Yes, I'd just like to hope that, or send out best wishes to those coming back to the classroom, and just hope that everybody's taking the precautions that have been going on for too long, it seems like, and really appreciate all the work that the staff, the teachers have put in to getting us starting up again. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Trustee Crawford.
Yes, I guess I was lucky enough last week to get a phone call from a friend of mine who teaches at the high school, and she was asking me what it was like to get the COVID shot. I said I hadn't gotten yet, and I kind of got lit up when I said that. She said, "Well, why do you expect us to get ours?" And I said, no, I just haven't got around to it. And she said, "Well, your age," and then it didn't get any better until I got another call from Cedar Lane, and he said basically the same thing. So long story short, I went with both of them and a lot of other classified and certificated employees of our school district that are really anxious to get back to the classroom and be with their kids. And we went to the fairgrounds. And for those who are wondering what that experience is like, you're very nervous. You don't know what to expect, but they alleviate all those fears. Very well organized. They don't miss anything. The shot, I would recommend you don't sleep on that side of your arm. That would be my tip. But if there's any fear out there about the shot, at least the first one, I guess I'm trying to alleviate that for you. Plus, more importantly, it was just great to see just so many teachers I hadn't seen, friends of mine classified that I haven't seen in, seems like, 2 years. That's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Trustee Boom.
And no comments.
Trustee Doug Criddle.
Thank you. No comments at this time.
Trustee Hasty.
Not at this time.
Trustee Gary Criddle.
Thank you. No comments at this time.
Well, I guess I'll make up for some of you because I do have a couple. One thing I would like to congratulate Kathleen Hansen on her retirement. I saw that in our board packet this time. Been with the district many, many years. So thank you, Kathleen, for all that you've done for us. As in the past, you may have, I kind of talked about some of our case rate numbers, and quickly again, just want to fill you in on that. Seems like we're doing much better this month. Back February 2nd, it's the first of the month, as I reported, we were at number, at 39 was the number for the case rate. February 9th, it went down to 24. February 16, it was 20.9. And then today's case rate was 15.1. So again, thank you to our community for everything that you're doing to help slow the spread of COVID-19. The second item that is talking about our board meetings. And I strongly feel that if we as a board are asking our staff and teachers to be back at their work sites, I truly think that our board meetings need to be held again in person in our boardroom. I've been working with Mr. Williams on trying to make sure we got the technical issues of how we can do that with being on Zoom, 10 or 12 computers in one area, and he has a good plan for that. So as soon as Mr. Williams feels that we're ready to be able to do that, I'll be reaching out to the board members and seeing if we can get back into the boardroom.
Well, Mr. Asenson, question, if we're going back to the boardroom, why are you worried about Zoom?
Because we would have to do it to be able to live stream the program, right?
Well, yeah, why?
Live stream it to the public because the public's not going to be there.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah. It still needs to be an open meeting for the public.
No, I thought we were just going back to the old format of having meetings. So I didn't know you were going to start
social distancing.
Well, we couldn't have public in there, right, because of the social distance part that we would have. So we would be looking at board members and very limited staff.
Hey, it all works. Go ahead.
Okay. So the second item to look at is our current curriculum delivery model. The current curriculum delivery model that was developed for the 2021 school year, not for the rest of eternity of education. We have approximately 3 months of school left, and it does not seem feasible to implement a new system for 3 months. The student, teacher, and family relationships that have been established would be disrupted or lost. New professional development would need to be provided. The logistics of implementation would take time. It just does not seem sensible to start over at this point in the year. So my last one is relationships. And I hope that we all can agree that positive relationships can enhance student learning. I have a short video that I would like to play for everyone. And that video is by Rita Pearson. Every kid needs a champion. So, Mr. Williams.
I have spent my entire life either at the schoolhouse, on the way to the schoolhouse, or talking about what happens in the schoolhouse. Both my parents were educators. My maternal grandparents were educators. And for the past 40 years, I've done the same thing. And so needless to say, over those years, I've had a chance to look at education reform from a lot of perspectives. Some of those reforms have been good. Some of them have been not so good. And we know why kids drop out. We know why kids don't learn. It's either poverty, low attendance, negative peer influences. We know why. But one of the things that we never discuss or we rarely discuss is the value and importance of human connection. Relationships. James Comer says that no significant learning can occur without a significant relationship. George Washington Carver says all learning is understanding relationships. Everyone in this room has been affected by a teacher or an adult. For years, I have watched people teach. I have looked at the best and I've looked at some of the worst. A colleague said to me one time, they don't pay me to like the kids. They pay me to teach a lesson. The kids should learn it. I should teach it. They should learn it. Case closed. Well, I said to her, you know, kids don't learn from people they don't like. She said, that's just a bunch of hooey. And I said to her, well, your year is going to be long and arduous, dear. Needless to say, it was. Some people think that you can either have it in you to build a relationship or you don't. I think Stephen Covey had the right idea. He said you ought to just throw in a few simple things, like seeking first to understand as opposed to being understood. Simple things like apologizing. You ever thought about that? Tell a kid you're sorry, they're in shock. I taught a lesson once on ratios. I'm not real good with math, but I was working on it. And I got back and looked at that teacher edition. I taught the whole lesson wrong. So I came back to class the next day and I said, look, guys, I need to apologize. I taught the whole lesson wrong. I'm so sorry. I said, that's okay, Miss Pearson. You were so excited. We just let you go. I have had classes that were so low, so academically deficient that I cried. I wondered, how am I going to take this group in 9 months from where they are to where they need to be? And it was difficult. It was awfully hard. How do I raise the self-esteem of a child and his academic achievement at the same time? One year I came up with a bright idea. I told all my students, you were chosen to be in my class because I am the best teacher and you are the best students. They put us all together so we could show everybody else how to do. One of the students said, really? I said, really? We have to show the other classes how to do it. So when we walk down the hall, people will notice us. So you can't make noise. You just have to strut. And I gave him a saying to say, I am somebody. I was somebody when I came. I'll be a better somebody when I leave. I am powerful and I am strong. I deserve the education that I get here. I have things to do, people to impress, and places to go. And they said, yeah. You say it long enough, it starts to be a part of you. And so I gave a quiz, 20 questions. Student missed 18. I put a +2 on his paper and a big smiley face. He said, Miss Pearson, is this an F? I said, yes. He said, then why'd you put a smiley face? I said, because you on the roll. You got 2 right. You didn't miss them all. I said, and when we review this, won't you do better? He said, yes, ma'am, I can do better. You see, minus 18 sucks all the life out of you. +2 said, I ain't all bad. For years, I watched my mother take the time at recess to review, go on home visits in the afternoon, buy combs and brushes and peanut butter and crackers to put in a desk drawer for kids that needed to eat and a washcloth and some soap for the kids who didn't smell so good. See, it's hard to teach kids who stink. And kids can be cruel. And so she kept those things in her desk. And years later, after she retired, I watched some of those same kids come through and say to her, you know, Miss Walker, you made a difference in my life. You made it work for me. You made me feel like I was somebody when I knew at the bottom I wasn't. And I want you to just see what I've become. And when my mama died 2 years ago at 92, there were so many former students at her funeral. It brought tears to my eyes, not because she was gone, but because she left a legacy of relationships that could never disappear. Can we stand to have more relationships? Absolutely. Will you like all your children? Of course not. And you know your toughest kids are never absent. Never. You won't like them all, and the tough ones show up for a reason. It's the connection. It's the relationships. And while you won't like them all, the key is they can never, ever know. So teachers become great actors and great actresses, and we come to work when we don't feel like it, and we listen to policy that doesn't make sense, and we teach anyway. We teach anyway because that's what we do. Teaching and learning should bring joy. How powerful would our world be if we had kids who were not afraid to take risks, who were not afraid to think, and who had a champion? Every child deserves a champion, an adult who will never give up on them, who understands the power of connection and insists that they become the best that they can possibly be. Is this job tough? You betcha. Oh, God, you betcha. But it is not impossible. We can do this. We're educators. We're born to make a difference. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. And the way I look at it, champions are not just our teachers, but all of our staff that we have for Marysville Joint Unified. So thank you to all of our champions of MJUSD. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association. Hi, Ms. Stegall.
Good evening. Thank you so much. Just to make you aware to start with, and in order to try to help out Mr. Williams in particular on the tech end of things, we have a bit of a team approach going on for our MUTA comments tonight. I'm going to be starting us off, and then Erica Schlesler is going to speak, and then Bonnie Marshall is going to finish things off for us this evening. So just to give you an idea of what's going on, and like I said, so that Mr. Williams knows what's going on the tech end of things, keep him in the loop. To start off tonight, we want to make sure that we, of course, thank our teachers and all of our teachers. We have 499 of the best teachers you will find anywhere, much less in Marysville, anywhere on the planet. The hardest working, most dedicated individuals you will find. Their tireless efforts, and they continue to fight for the educational equity of all of our students.
So, Angela, can I interrupt you for a moment?
Absolutely.
The live stream is not up right now, so can we just take a little break for a minute or two, and hopefully we can get the live stream up so the public can hear, okay? Sorry about that.
Nope, you're good. I just got text about the same thing.
Okay.
Maybe we could watch another video while we're waiting.
We may have a hard time getting it back. We may have to create a new stream. The stream was blocked for copyright issues.
Okay. How involved is that? Thank you.
Gotta love Zoom.
It's not Zoom. It's copyright laws, and YouTube has a tendency to block you when you violate them. Not Zoom.
Thank you, boss.
If only.
How many people?
Okay, so Angela, I think we're up and running. If it's not the entire stream that's working, then what we'll do is we'll do the recording and then we'll post the recording on the website. So go ahead, Angela.
Thank you, sir. So as I was saying, the 499 dedicated teachers in Marysville Joint Unified fight every day, 365 days a year, year after year, for the educational equity of all of our students. And to kind of, I guess you would say, transition into comments for tonight, though, I do feel that it is absolutely necessary to address the discussions from the February 9th meeting. Since we're not allowed to say anything during those discussions, our only option now is to address them after the fact. And much like, you know, people now talk about the word unprecedented is so like overused and overwrought that we try to avoid it. I'm also going to be adding disappointed and discouraged to my list. I find myself using those terms a lot, and in particular during these meetings and in regards to these meetings. And the last meeting was no different, unfortunately. It was beyond disappointing and discouraging that things were so grossly mischaracterized. The discussion regarding social distancing and the complete and utter mischaracterization, misrepresentation of MUTA's stance and belief in the health and safety MOU. The president of the school board mentioned that our signed MOU on health and safety, that we do have 6 feet in there, even though that item wasn't agreed to by MUTA, we were going to say we're keeping them 6 feet apart. The implication there is that MUTA wasn't for that. And in all actuality, And I even have the signed document right here. In all actuality, Muta was for that. Muta fought months for that. That's the very protection that we fought so diligently for. And we came to, I don't even know how many of these meetings, and begged the board for their support in that. And you refused. As a school board, you refused to back us up on that. And now you have the audacity to stake your claim to the righteous ideal of 6 feet social distancing while you're throwing the teachers that you ignored under the bus seems downright unacceptable to me. What Muta disagreed with was that we needed to have a signed health and safety MOU because you were putting teachers in classrooms within days. And so we had to have something. And so we signed off basically almost kind of like a sign of signing under duress. But we fought diligently for 6 feet social distancing. Also, that then led into the discussion about the new CDPH guidelines in reference to 4 feet. And it was stated that we would like to strive for 6 feet, which is a great idea. Great idea that, of course, Muta obviously backs. And the discussion went into how the CDPH now says that you can be closer than 6 feet, that you can actually be 4 feet. And it was mentioned, though, that the CDPH isn't saying, oh, well, you know, you could just do 4 feet, though. It was explained that there's this concept now of good faith effort. That's all well and good, but we have no idea what that good faith effort might be. And part of the reason that we don't know that is because in that document, it was never shared with us. The CPP, which includes, you know, the district's now COVID prevention program that includes their CSP, their COVID safety checklist, was never shared with the teachers union. We never saw it before it went in. Nobody ever told us anything about it being submitted to Dr. Liu for her approval. And now with omissions in it, one of which the most glaring is the labor organization sheet, which you'll find is blank. Now we're told that, oh, too bad, teachers union. It's been more than 7 days since Dr. Liu had it. And the regulation says that after Dr. Liu doesn't have a response for 7 days, it's just taken as an approval. And so now the teachers union, we're just left with too bad, how sad. I hear a lot of talk about things like transparency and you know, good faith efforts and being honest. And I don't know how honest and transparent anybody thinks they're being by submitting a document like that, sight unseen by the teachers union. And it's not a mistake. There's no way it's a mistake. And so you just showed a video about building relationships. I'm not sure what kind of relationship you think you're building at that point in time when you are being dishonest and anything but transparent, when you're being, as our students would call it, shady. I don't know what kind of relationship you think you're building at that point. But also at the last meeting, Muta once again extended an olive branch, a last-ditch effort to try to bargain an MOU because you were sending teachers back today. So we were willing, over a week off, just like we gave up our entire summer vacation to try to bargain with the district, we were willing to give up our week off. And instead, in so many words, we were basically told to kind of choke on our olive branch. Our olive branch was tossed back in our face, and we were told that we were just going to let it play out. You know, I don't know exactly why that would be, because anybody can look up the policies, procedures, and such going through mediation and fact-finding, and our mediator even sat right there and told us that we are well within our rights, that we are not going to screw up any fundamental process, we are not going to interfere or get in the way of anything by continuing to try to bargain through this. You already knew you were going to be sending teachers back. Why not attempt an MOU at that point in time? But instead, I mean, and this is all stuff that your high-priced lawyer could have told you. I'm telling you for free, but your lawyer could tell you the same thing. And so instead now, we're really left with absolutely positively no choice but in how to have to pursue things in means and in ways that we have never wanted to. We have tried mightily and extensively to avoid these ways, including, of course, the fact that the district was served with an unfair labor practice charge by the teachers union. We've had to go that route now. We've also now had to file grievances. And so you've left us with no choice. We have to do something to try to protect ourselves because you won't. And so speaking of the grievances and such that we're working on, that's why I have Erica Schlesler here. And so she is going to talk about that end of things. So, Mrs. Schlesler.
Hey, everybody. Grievance chair here. I really appreciate that video that you shared, Randy, even though it apparently caused a little bit of an issue, because relationships are important. And as many of you know, I had been president for 6 years and very involved 3 years before that. And I really thought that we had built a good relationship between the association and the district. And looking at how everything is going and the problems that people just can't seem to work through now is mind-blowing. Right now, we are working in a hostile working environment and intimidating. The very latest thing that many of us received was a letter that the email part of it was pretty good. It said that those of us with the need for an accommodation had supplied the district with sufficient verification of our need to avoid in-person duties for the remainder of the year. And we had gotten that already before. But then the attached, the attached letter said that if there is a greater number of employees eligible for virtual assignments than there are available positions or duties, the district may be required to place some employees on leave. Period. With no explanation of how that decision might be made, what that means, put on leave, like not paid leave. So from my prior experience as president and with all the things that I had dealt with in the past, I just don't see how it would be possible for a district who has allowed for this accommodation that they've given for a health reason to take it back and not pay people. Because we have contracts. So I think the reason that it wasn't specified paid or not paid, let me say this. I thought until a conversation I had earlier today that the reason was that if you drop a bomb like that on a bunch of people who are already terrified, we're in the midst of a pandemic, we're worried about our family members, we're worried about our students, we're worried about what's the next thing going to be that we're going to have to do, that, hey, you just might stop getting paid willy-nilly, that you might expect people to get scared enough to go to their doctor and say, is there some other accommodation? Could I wear a hazmat suit? I mean, is there something I can do so that I don't get fired? So to me, that letter was a threat. Also one with not a lot of standing, because let's look at it this way. Right now, we have a huge shortage of staff to take care of all the things that have to be done when you have students on campus. all the screenings and the getting people their lunches and just all, there's so many things. Just go to a school site if they'll allow you on, if you've been screened, and you could see the kind of minute detail that has to be considered and all the staff it takes to do that. And when you have people that have a positive contact, a positive test, or actually just, you know, sick with something else, there's not enough subs, there's not enough staff to cover. So how, if it's me that gets put on leave, how is that helping my students? Because right now, those students get me virtually and a human in the classroom. Without me, that substitute who may not be qualified because we don't have enough qualified people would have to put together the lesson plan and the Google Classroom and set up the Zoom meetings and do the assessments and do everything. So it seems like an empty threat, but it did feel like a threat. I'm told it wasn't meant that way, but we'll see. Meanwhile, the grievances that we've had to file, and these I doubt are the last ones, but I filed 3 grievances in the last few days. I want to apologize to elementary principals for the fear they may have felt when they all got this, but it's elementary students going back, and it's elementary principals who the first level of a grievance you file with the site principal. In this case, it's all of the elementary site principals. Our teachers were reassigned from distance learning to hybrid learning. Our assignments up until now were to be distance learning. The assignment of hybrid learning, while it happened for a couple of weeks back in November, for all of elementary, it's a whole new assignment. It's a whole different way of looking at your work conditions. And our collective bargaining agreement includes a section on involuntary reassignment in which the teacher being reassigned has to have 10 working days notice in writing with an educational reason as to why they're being reassigned. And that didn't happen. Now, this is something that if since last spring, the bargaining sessions had actually been bargaining sessions rather than a lawyer saying, we don't have to do that, are things that we could have worked out. Those things could have been written up as to if we're going to switch from, because everybody knew that we would be going back and forth from distance to in person. So you plan for that. That's what the CBA is. It's a plan. So when everybody decides that we're going to go into the classroom, what's the process for that? You put that in a collective bargaining agreement. And maybe you have less time, but it needs to be in the agreement. And that's been a huge failure for our district that we haven't been able to get that agreement in. Then the other thing we have is, oddly, relief breaks in our collective bargaining agreement. Well, first of all, if you know teachers, you know that one of the things that is so different from any other job is you don't get to go to the bathroom when you need to, right? Luckily for us, there is state law, labor law, that says that you get 10 minutes early on in your day and in the second half of your day. And it can't just be 20 minutes stuck at the end. In our collective bargaining agreement, it says that how that relief break will be given is to be determined mutually between the teachers and the administrator. Some of our sites, in trying to comply with what the district is making them do, put out schedules that included 5-minute breaks. You have to be special to be able to right on the dot, make it in 5 minutes away from your students who are saying, oh, wait, Mrs. Schlesler, what's happening? And the kinds of just, yeah. But the law says 10 minutes, and so it needs to be 10 minutes. In that case, the schedules needed to be shared with the association ahead of time so that we could make sure that all of those things were complied with. We understand that site principals have been under a huge amount of pressure and having to throw things together as quickly as well as possible. I think a lot of them are doing heroic jobs at that, given what the district has piled on for them to do. Next are kindergarten instructional minutes. I filed a grievance on that because there's new minutes, according to the ed code with Senate Bill 98. They're only required to have 180. In our district, a regular day for kindergarten is 210. But the schedule that the district put out, not necessarily the individual sites, because I believe that some of those have been varied, is 360 minutes. Ironically, exactly twice the length of the 180 minimum that's required. And the remainder of, and also for that, after that 210 minutes, the teacher is able to decide if they want to do an extended day with all of their students or with some of their students, or not do an extended day at all. If they do one, it's 45 minutes worth. And if they don't, then the principal is able to tell the kindergarten teacher what to do to help with another primary grade level. None of that's happening. And the schedule is just crazy. The remainder of the day is up to our professional judgment. That's when we do interventions, meeting with parents, collaboration, planning, learning a new type of technology, comforting colleagues, planning to speak at a board meeting. And the district has no right to schedule every minute of our day. One other aspect that's come up is quarantine leave. What happens if your principal, your teacher, the principal says there was a positive test and you're a direct contact, so you have to be in quarantine? And maybe not all of your students were in contact with you or that person, because maybe that contact happened outside of your classroom, or they weren't as close to the students, but for whatever reason, or it's a different cohort. So when this other cohort comes to class, you're not there because you're in quarantine. Teachers are being threatened now by the fact that we don't have anything in writing to assure us about what's going to happen. We don't have in writing an agreement that says if you're in quarantine, you get paid like administrative leave, for example. As far as our teachers know, we would be having to pay out of our own sick leave because so-and-so who sat next to us when they weren't supposed to was positive. We should know the answers to these questions before we implement there and get there. A collective bargaining agreement is a plan, that it's what it's there for. And we've known that this was a possibility since last March. It's almost a year now. We should have what to do about quarantine figured out. So I just want to say it's embarrassing that we don't have it figured out now. And I have always done grievances in a way where I try not to get to the point of actually having to write anything down, where I can just call up and say, you know, it looks like this is happening and it seems like that violates the contract. Can we fix that? Normally, with good relationships, principals, district administrators are able to say, you know what, I see what you mean. I didn't realize that was happening, or maybe they just didn't understand. And we fix it. And we don't have to go through all of this. But that relationship thing, it's about teachers too. As administrators, you need to look at us teachers like we're your students. We need to be getting that positive vibe, that positive relationship, and not always being threatened. Thank you for the time. I understand that my very close team member, I'm so proud of her for coming on, Ms. Bonnie Marshall, is going to be speaking next.
Thank you, Erica. I'm going to share a letter that was drafted by the organizing committee. It's dated 2/23/21. To our board members and listening audience, the purpose of reading this letter tonight is to share information with you from the voices of your teachers. We want to begin by stating that we, the teachers, want to be back in the classroom. We want to give our all so that our students can succeed. We want to feel safe in our workplace, and we want to feel supported as we take on yet another challenge with doing both hybrid and distance learning. As your employees continue to face the ever-changing challenges of this school year, we recognize that it can be difficult to share every detail of what's happening in the day-to-day hustle and bustle. It's our hope that you will take into consideration some of the challenges that we are facing as you have begun to reopen our school sites without having a written agreement in place with MUTA. Tonight, we will share information on four pressing topics. Our first topic has to do with meeting in person. Unclear guidelines for this process and our students and staff safety. For many teachers, the pressure to meet in person or to be on site is amplified. However, as our sites open, many of the office personnel will remain on rotating schedules. This means that not only will office staff, such as secretaries and attendance clerks, be in the office part-time, but this will also include administrators, counselors, and any other position held within office walls. Even though we know the number of students coming onto the campus will be less than a pre-COVID year, many of the COVID check-in points and screening stations are housed at the site administration buildings and will be operating on half of a staff at any given time. And yet, at the same time, told to stay out of the office area for the safety of office staff. Therefore, protocols for accomplishing any sort of normal functioning is in conflict with itself, in addition, while mandating that teachers return to the classroom. The purpose of these rotating schedules is to, however, teachers are being asked to risk exposure, thus creating a major equity issue. Finally, although teachers are being encouraged to be on campus, they're being told that all PLC and staff meetings must still be held virtually. Yet, as we open sites, it is okay for teachers to be with students all day. Or on a more poignant point, you, the school board, are still having meetings virtually when sites are being opened, and this seems like a very big equity issue. And I did want to recognize Mr. Rasmussen for suggesting that the board meetings be held less virtually. Sorry. Our second topic has to do with accommodation fulfillment and the letters that have been sent out to teachers. Some teachers who have requested accommodations have not heard anything since their first interview round, even though they completed the follow-up tasks that were asked of them. Other teachers who were previously told that they would be accommodated are now being told that those accommodations are being revoked, while others are still waiting word for their accommodations and if they will grant it. In addition, there is a tagline at the end of the district letter stating that if teachers wish to continue working from home, they will either be placed onto administrative or unpaid leave. The use of the verb unpaid leave feels like a bullying tactic to scare teachers back into the classroom. In the event that teachers still wish to work from home, we are already aware that the district does not have enough substitutes to cover sick teachers, let alone those that need subs as part of their accommodations. To then be threatened with a loss of pay for unpaid leave, it kills any sort of spirit and morale that teachers may have left. At this point, it is definitely not best for our students. The third topic is the working conditions for teachers and the quality of education that our students will receive as we return to sites. As schedules are being made and plans are being put into place, schedule restrictions are being put in place without any bit addresses the Erica's subject of having only the 5 minutes for the bathroom break. So 4 hours, an employee must be allowed a 10-minute break. Someone who's never taught before, but for those that have and catch your breath, is incredibly important, so being placed on a bathroom schedule. Now, last time we checked, the need to use the restroom has never done well on a time frame. Other working conditions include the confusion of protocol and the methods in which teachers could use all the new technology to achieve the best learning environment for both hybrid and distance learners. Finally, our fourth and final topic we wish to share tonight has to do with the relationship between MUTA and Mr. Cena. Did you know that the MUTA bargaining team was willing to meet a final time prior to the reopening of sites and prior to the fact-finding process in hopes of being able to come to some agreement for working conditions? Mr. Cena refused this opportunity. As someone who was once a classroom educator and highly esteemed administrator, the relationship and strain of the bargaining process has really tarnished not only the relationship between MUTA and the district, but also the teachers' trust in our superintendent to care for us, the teachers. Although his words may be well-intended, his actions are damaging the morale and hearts of the Marysville Joint Unified Teachers. Despite everything that we have shared with you this evening, teachers want to be back in the classroom. We miss our students, we miss our colleagues, and more importantly, we miss the things that we used to enjoy about our jobs. This last year has been incredibly difficult for many members of our community. We recognize that the district wants us to be happy about returning to the classrooms, but the reality is that for many, there is dread, anxiety, and a fear for our lives. With the challenges of getting the vaccine out to those that want it, the stress of teaching hybrid and distance at the same time, the need to learn new technologies with no time to learn, and still making sure we're there for our students has added layer upon layer on the teacher. We need the board, the district administrators, and our community members to hear us. We, the teachers, are not okay, and we need your support. We are asking the board to take into consideration how for every action the district takes, there's a reaction that affects our students and teachers. We ask that, as the fact-finding process concludes, that you encourage the district to return to the bargaining table as we all come to terms with equitable working and learning conditions as we move forward. We need to work together. We are MUTA, and we are site reps and executive board members. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rasmussen.
Thank you. Thank you to all three of you. Next, we have Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3.
Yes, Lord Rasmussen, this is Felix Huerta from the Operating Engineers.
Yes, go ahead, sir.
Yes, thank you for allowing me to speak today. I appreciate it. So first of all, we have submitted a request to meet and confer over the wages and benefits of the employees. We've made a sunshine proposal that we submitted to the district last week, and we have heard back from the district about beginning the process next week, so we appreciate that. The second thing I wanted to raise was that we did submit a request to deal with a health and safety issue over at the transportation department. I sent both superintendent and assistant superintendent an email. I included both board member, president and vice president. We're very concerned about the cleanliness of the transportation department break room. I know that you saw the photos. Hopefully we can get a permanent solution to the pest infestation that's taking place there. I know it's a rural area, but it does need to be clean for employees to be able to use the break rooms. And I hope that we get a response from the district. I understand from Mr. Taylor that he is well aware of the situation. It sounds like a temporary solution has been found. Somebody went in there and cleaned it, but I think it needs to be a more permanent solution. And so I'm hoping to hear back from the district about that. So we look forward to beginning the bargaining sessions with the district. The one thing that I've said to the district is, we will not meet by video. If the district is going to open the schools for children and staff, our staff have been essential workers from the beginning. And so we're going to insist on in-person, mass, socially distanced bargaining. We're not going to meet any other way. So I'm very happy to hear that you will begin to open up the board meetings. But I also believe that you also need to let the public participate in those board meetings, socially distance and mass, as you require all the other essential workers at the district. We represent 350 employees there, and they're all required to work because they're essential workers. I'm considered an essential worker. And if you're going to begin to open up schools for in-person learning, I think that you need to take the same risk that you're asking all the staff, the teachers, and the students to take. So thank you very much.
Thank you. California School Employees Association, number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees.
Thank you, President Rasmussen. So just a few quick things tonight for AMACE. First of all, to Kathleen, who I know is out there watching. Anyone who's worked in public education, no matter what realm, know how much you give on a day, in a year, and in a lifetime or a career. And as you fade away off into the sunset and get to enjoy your well-earned retirement, I just want to thank you for all the things that you've done that people will never know that you've done, all of the extra hours and work that you put in. So thank you for everything, Kathleen, as you go. I'd also like to thank our community for coming together during this time and helping out in so many ways. And so next board meeting, you'll see a bunch of donations coming through from Ed Services. But we've had tons of companies and local organizations donate gift cards and prizes for us to be able to give out to teachers as they're participating in trainings, and as well as for the things that they're doing and being shouted out for their friends. So if you go to the Ed Services website, you can see the last 19 recipients that were given out this last week, the prizes. And so that's all in all able to happen because of the generosity of our community and our community's willingness to come in and try to help us with these things. I know you hear a lot of things. And from that video, I want to say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that there's such different feelings on this. I'm sorry that both sides are hurting so bad and trying to get kids back in school. I do believe everyone wants what's best or what they believe is best. But I just want to offer a little bit of hope. Today around the schools, smiling faces, running and happy. It was an amazing thing. Going out after school around the DO, I walked over to the track, saw track practice going on, got to talk to Marcy Tarr and the coach about the things that they're trying to do. Walked over by the pool to see if swim practice was going on, found some of the football players out. I wanted to commend DJ, one of our athletic trainers. The protocols were all in place. He had actually moved the weight room outside so the kids were able to get out there and be physically active and doing things. And just, it's the same energy I saw in my daughter when she started swim practice a few weeks ago, just that smile on her face and an energy that she hasn't had through this whole thing. And so just seeing that today, I know there's difficulties, I know there's heartaches, and for that, I'm sorry. But I needed that hope in seeing it today. I encourage all the board members and everyone else who has an opportunity without getting too close or doing anything that would jeopardize people's health to get out and see it because it was a beautiful thing to see today. We had 60 teachers in training this afternoon looking at the best technology ways to go about this new model as we move into it. So I wanted to thank Alicia Wright for putting together that and all the teachers who are participating. And then finally, no matter when we come back or how this looks as we return, I'm just really looking forward to seeing all of my colleagues and friends again. So from AMACE, for everything that everyone's doing, we just wanted to say thank you. And we're sorry everyone's hurting so much on both sides. And I hope we get to a place in the middle where we can all get kids back to school. Thanks.
Thank you. Supervisory unit. Next, we have public comments. For teleconference meetings, please submit your public comment card located on the district webpage at www.mjusd.com under board before the board meeting begins. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out public comment cards before the start of the meeting, give it to the secretary, board president, or superintendent. The public may address topics not on the agenda during this section of the agenda or ask that they be heard during a specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per board bylaw 9323. The Ralph and Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of clarifying questions. California Government Code Section 54954.2.A states, no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the proposed agenda, except that members of a legislative body or its staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony rights under Section 54954.3. We do have a few public comments. Mr. Carrion will be our timekeeper for us. Our first is Amanda Bowman. Amanda?
Good evening. I wanted to turn my camera on and say hi. My connection is a little unstable, so I'm going to turn my camera back off, but I am here.
Thank you.
So as I started my day today, I had a mix of feelings. Sorry, I have a new dog with puppies. First, I am so excited for the students who are coming back on campus today. Some for the very first time ever. I remember how excited my own children were and how excited everyone was around them to start that new experience. At the very same time, I was extremely saddened that we have teachers starting back without an assigned agreement with our union. Our teachers' union and district always found ways to make concessions, compromises, and in the end, we have always done what is right for our students. I have prided myself on working for a district that puts the students first. A district that knows our working conditions are our students' learning conditions. I am overwhelmed by our breakdown of negotiations, the bad faith bargaining, and the surface bargaining that has occurred. The overall dismissal of teachers has made my belief and confidence in my district waver. The fact that we have teachers who were granted accommodations, but who are now being told that accommodations are no longer available and they might have to go on leave is very disheartening. How can anyone argue that providing doctor recommendation to support to staff is not also supporting our students? Our staff and students deserve better. Our students deserve more. Mr. Rasmussen talked and showed a video about relationships. I'm a special education teacher. It is what we live by. You have to build those relationships. Making connections is key. Learning from people we like is really important. Can't this also be applied to our working environment as well? Shouldn't we feel that the people we work for like us and believe in us and know that we will be successful and that they listen to us when we need to be heard? Shouldn't I feel like my district runs a relationship with me and that I am important as well as my students? I do not feel that our overall environment is toxic, but I do believe that there is a disconnect, and having such a brand new board and having an opportunity to make change and to make things better for everybody starts today. We can bargain something. Let's see what we can make happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. Next, we have Linda Strang. Linda?
Okay, once again, I do have an unstable connection too, so I will be stopping my video. So as I listened to the previous board meeting, it became apparent that several members of MJUSD leadership shared erroneous ideas regarding why MUTA and the district office are not in agreement. It has never been about whether or not teachers return to in-person instruction, but about having a health and safety memorandum of understanding before we return. Some of the issues that we cannot agree upon are those that would protect the health and well-being of staff and students. The mixing of cohorts is one example. I have listened to district office staff state that mixing of cohorts will not occur and have heard parents being told the same. If the district office actually intended to keep this promise to parents, why can't they put it in our MOU? Another request made by MUTA was that the district office perform contact tracing for visitors to our classrooms. After all, teachers are required to use a QR code for contact tracing purposes, and daily class attendance does the same for students. I am unsure why visitors are not held to the same standards. I am positive parents as well as teachers would expect to be informed of any potential COVID exposure. As it stands, if a visitor exposes students and staff to COVID, there is no system in place to provide this information to staff or parents. Just think of the potential for the spread of COVID such a laissez-faire attitude causes. Lastly, teachers want to ensure that they have enough time and energy to provide their students with a quality education. The district office has brought up the idea of teachers taking on some of the attendance clerk's duties that have never been performed by teachers in my 30 years of teaching in this district. Other time issues are requiring teachers to teach three different groups and reducing prep time while requiring extra work. There are only so many in a day, and teachers prefer to use them to infuse their lessons with enthusiasm and excitement rather than slogging through yet another day in a fog of exhaustion. Board members, as leaders during this pandemic, you have a responsibility to the students and staff of this district. Get more involved with the formation of an acceptable health and safety MOU with MUTA. After all, our students will be the winners.
Linda, thank you very much. That is the end of your 3 minutes. Thank you.
I used them all up.
Yeah, thank you very much. I had another one for Bonnie Marshall, but I think you already read your letter. Is that accurate?
That is accurate, Mr. Rasmussen.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Next we have a presentation from Christy White and Associates for the 2019-20 Independent Audit Report. Mrs. Lossing, or who do we have for that?
Yes, thank you, Board President Rasmussen. Good evening, board members, Superintendent Sina. Before I introduce our representative from the Christy White firm, I'd like to take a moment to acknowledge the outstanding work of our Fiscal Services Department. The staff's knowledgeable, rigorous regarding compliance, and being extremely helpful to school sites and the other departments of the district. Thank you, Fiscal Services Team. Excellent work. Each year, as defined in both our Governmental Accounting Standards Board Statement Number 34 and in the California Ed Code Section 41020, the district contracts with an independent accounting firm to conduct an annual audit of the district's financial performance for the year. This audit is for the year ending June 30th, 2020. As in the year prior, the firm of Christy White and Associates performed the audit. All funds of the district were included, as well as pupil attendance procedures And here today to present the audit report is Heather Dowd, an associate at the Christie White firm. Heather?
Thank you, Penny. Good evening. Thank you for having me here. As Penny mentioned, I'm the partner on the audit for the Marysville Joint Unified School District. I wasn't going to walk through the entire report. What I was going to do is kind of an overview of our opinions and a little bit of those procedures that we do to get those opinions. Again, this is for the fiscal year ending June 30, 2020. I know it seems so long ago now, but okay. I want to start off by saying the district received an unmodified opinion, and on page one of the audit report is, you know, bottom paragraph, our opinion, and that opinion is the best opinion we can get. Essentially, this means that we didn't disagree with any of the numbers and that we received all the information we needed to verify the numbers, and the controls that were in place that needed to be were in place. So again, unmodified opinion, the best opinion you can get. Okay. So then we also look at the financial statements, the internal controls over financial reporting with the government auditing standards. And what does that mean? Well, what are we doing? We're looking to make sure, for example, cash. You report your cash and what you report in the county treasury, we verify with the county treasury that it exists and that you're doing your reconciliations, your accounts receivable. We are looking at all the LCFF revenue and all the other types of federal and state grants and making sure that you're, one, reporting your revenue correctly, like your lottery, and then two, that the receivable associated with that is reported. Same thing, capital assets. In the past couple of years, there was a finding related to capital assets, and the district worked hard this year to clear that up and has really kind of been able to account for those capital assets, those with the depreciation and work in progress, moving those over to the correct categories. Same thing with accounts payable. What are we looking at? We're looking at your purchase orders. We're looking at your approvals. We're looking at your budgets. We're looking at allowable costs with the grant programs. Same thing with your ASBs, associated student bodies, long-term debt. And then finally, overall, that is the journal entry process. And here I've really simplified it, but a lot of work goes into looking in that detail. But I can say that we did not come across, we didn't report any significant deficiencies and there weren't any material weaknesses. In addition, there were no instances of non-compliance material to the financial statements. Okay, so that's one piece. The second thing we're looking at is your federal program. So you guys receive over $750,000 in federal programs. So the Office of Management and Budget requires that we audit your federal programs each year. This year, we selected three programs, your child nutrition program, your special education program, and which is new this year because you guys expended almost, I think, $3 million in 2019-20 of your coronavirus relief fund, learning loss and mitigation. We also tested that. So what did we do? Well, I will tell you, we pulled a number of expenditures related to this and how those costs were charged. We look at the reporting that is required by the office, you know, by the federal and state government. And we're also looking at the indirect cost charge, if any allowable, right? They're not allowable on the CRF funds. And I can report that you also received an unmodified opinion, which is the best opinion possible. There were no significant deficiencies or material weaknesses. I do want to note you have other funds related to learning loss mitigation, the ESSER and the GEAR funds in 2021, and there's high likelihood they will be audited in that year, depending on the dollar amounts expended, just to kind of give you an idea. Finally, there is another opinion we must issue that is unique to school districts, and that is from the state controller's office. So the state controller each year gets together and puts an audit guide out, and they put stuff in there like attendance, right? So how does all the rules that are related to attendance on teacher certification, the SARCs, the school accountability report cards that you review, we have to make sure the amount, the information reported in there is correctly. Your unduplicated pupil counts, all the data in there is correct. And again, there's a number of items here. Instructional time, a really hard area to get a really perfect opinion because it changes each year depending. And what I can report is that the district received an unmodified opinion. Again, a great, the best opinion possible. No significant deficiencies and no material weaknesses. I also just want to note in-state compliance, it is going to be a very different year in 2021. And the district has worked very hard in trying to make sure that they're going to meet. They've met with us throughout the entire process because the way we test attendance is changing significantly. Where once we used to come out and look at attendance notes, now we're talking about weekly engagement records and a different way of tracking. Again, a lot of the procedures are changing in here. And so it's all, you know, the district's doing a very good job of trying to keep on top of it and met with us frequently. So we'll look at that this upcoming year, actually probably next month, so soon. And so I just wanted to point that out. Overall, I just want to thank the district because with everything else, the audit still went on. And the same timing that we do the audit still happened around the same time, and the district was able to provide everything we needed electronically. When I say expenditures, I mean somebody had to upload all that information to our secure portal and scan all that information in, and they had to scan all the reports that we were looking at, and then, you know, go back and forth through email and phone conversations. And so a lot of work went into this, and I really want to thank the team in that and say we really appreciate it. I'm also happy to answer any questions if anybody has any.
Board members, do we have any questions for Ms. Rubio?
It seems like a great review for the district. Thank you.
So, Ms. Rubio, I had a little difficulty hearing. I don't know if you covered this, but on the last page, page 85 of the booklet that we got, it has the findings, hashtag 2019-001, capital assets inventory. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Absolutely. In the past years, there was a large dollar amount that was sitting in your work in progress. So we had always put that as a finding because although the district needed to go through and take it out of work in progress and put it into the correct category. So the dollar amount was always there. They just needed to put it in the correct categories to depreciate. And that hadn't been happening. In the year 2019-20, a significant progress was made to move that information and make sure that capital assets reporting is correct. And the district is still working towards that, but now it's not at the material level that we were concerned with prior to this. So this is a finding that was related to the 2018-19 fiscal year and has been implemented in 19-20. And it was also a finding in 2017-18. So it was a finding in 2017-18 and 18-19 and is no longer a finding in 19-20. And, going forward, hopefully it won't be a finding in 2021.
So you said it's not a finding this year?
No, it's not a 19-20 finding. It's been resolved to a point that we feel comfortable with the numbers and the support has been provided.
Okay, so we disregard page 85? Is that what you're saying?
No, because that is the summary of prior year findings.
I see what you're saying. Okay, for this year, it shouldn't show up.
Right.
So actually, I was reviewing clear back in 2016, our booklets, and it had the same page even in 2016. So hopefully we're going to make some headway on that. Thank you. Any other comments or questions, board members? Thank you, Ms. Rubio.
Thank you.
Superintendent's report. Mr. Cena?
Yes, thank you. Together, serving every student every day in every way. We've been on this COVID journey for a long time, and throughout this time, we've had four collective goals. One is to slow the spread of COVID-19, to ensure the health and safety of students and staff, maintain relationships, and facilitate learning. And it's been 347 days since March 13th, which was our last day that we had traditional in-person instruction. And every day, every person in our district, no matter what our role, has been working to try to create this opportunity for students to return to school in a health and safe environment for everybody. And as the district made a movement in November, and we began a preschool through first grade in-person blended instruction, and then November 16th, that process was paused, and it happened that today is 99 days since that pause. And then today, our district resumed that phasing in with second graders starting today, along with preschool through second grade. And tonight, our director of student attendance and discipline, Jolie Critchfield, and a team of principals have brought some pictures tonight of that, of the first day. And so as we look at these pictures, that thinking of what's being done to ensure the health and safety of students and staff and maintain the relationships, particularly between adults and students on campus, and facilitating learning. Director Critchfield.
Oh, thank you. As some of you know, my title is attendance and discipline director, but really it's about getting kids engaged in school. And so my past job before the pandemic, you know, I would go out to houses and do whatever I needed to do to get kids into school because they were refusing to go. And now since the pandemic, we've been knocking on doors, the team of administrators and myself, trying to get, you know, to get kids engaged in learning at home. And so every single time the kids would always say, we just want to go back to school. And so this day has come, our second day of school. And so we're very, very excited about what's going on. So these pictures are from today. I only have about 15 slides, but these are from different schools of what's going on. So we'll go ahead and next slide. Brian, oh, there we go. So those are the four goals that we talked about, and maintaining relationships and facilitating student learning has been happening during distance learning and in the classroom. So we teachers and support staff and everybody has been working really hard to make sure that happens, even when the kids are at home on their laptops. Go ahead, next one. Okay, so even this is going on tonight, actually, when we talk about maintaining relationships, there are still students that are not attending in-person instruction because it's TK through second grade this week. So our BOGA school has been doing pop-up things in the community for families and students to come and get information and prizes and help with distance learning. So this is actually happening tonight, that even though those kids who are not in the classroom, school sites are doing amazing things to keep that relationship alive and well during distance learning and hybrid blended. Okay, next. Also, we've been facilitating student learning, so I just wanted to kind of put up a couple examples of like what a classroom might look like in an elementary school with the Zoom links and things like this. This is Mrs. Stoneberger's Bargers from Arboga School. She was gave it to me to share. And then the different schedules that are going on. Schools, when kids were at home, were still calling kids in, putting classroom schedules together, all kinds of stuff. We were having specialized groups come into the school that needed that extra help to get engaged in learning while at home. And so they were invited into the school maintaining safety protocols. So next slide. Here is the school schedule. The purpose behind the two cohorts is so that we don't have too many kids in one classroom. When they do come back onto campus, we can maintain that social distancing. So this week we have two TK through second grades. Next week will be third grade and fourth. And then the following week we will be fifth and sixth grades. Next slide. Most schools have several entrances for student health checks to go into school. So the kindergartners might have a separate entrance than others. Everything is labeled well. They have adults there ready to make sure kids have their masks on and taking their temperatures. Next slide. The parents can either drop off their students in the front of their school. A lot of the kindergarten parents do like to bring their kids up to the front, but they don't go onto campus. So this is the parents dropping off at the front of the school, and they check the temperature there and make sure the kids are in the right cohort. Next slide. So this is when the parents come up to the screener, they get tested, and then a teacher or not a teacher, I'm sorry, they're in the classroom. A support staff walks the kids to the classroom. And a perfect example of relationships maintaining even during distance learning, as hard as it is over a Chromebook. Today I saw a kindergartner that I was supposed to walk to class actually just run to the class. He remembered where the classroom was in kindergarten at Oliver's school since November, and he was running. So I thought, oh my gosh, wait for me. But anyway, it was pretty awesome. He was excited to go there. And usually we typically see kids on first days of school, especially in kindergarten, crying, but not today. So next slide. So, like I said, after screening, students are escorted to class. So you can see right there the hallways that are marked and things like that. Next slide. Teachers were excited to see their students just as much as the students were excited to see them. And they were just, you know, when you look at, we were worried about kids wearing face masks and making sure they're wearing them properly. I think they do a better job than a lot of adults, including me. I tend to fiddle with them sometimes. And they do a great job wearing their face covering. So we're really proud of them. Next slide. So again, we talked about the two cohorts. So if you're cohort A, you go to school on Tuesday and Wednesday, cohort B, those Thursdays and Fridays. And that's so that we can maintain that distancing in the classroom. So kids are not sitting closer than 6 feet. Next slide. Our students are now, with the new guidance, are able to use the playground equipment. I'm so excited about this. We just make sure that they sanitize their hands before and after use, and they stay within their stable groups when they're using the playground equipment. Yay. Next slide. Schools have created outside areas for kids to play games. So this is something that Edgewater School did. And they painted a lot of the stuff on the grounds of the kids and did games where they can section off the area so the kids do not mix stable groups. Next. Snack time's happening. So you'll see at the tables and the kids are distanced apart, and the Sep Browns Valley and Cordova School, and they have their little snack table. Next one. And then you have the custodians. I love the little spray things that they're using now for the playground equipment and all the picnic tables. So that's to make sure that they're sanitizing those. Next slide. There's markings throughout the campuses. Everybody has kind of different ones. I thought this was really cool at Edgewater. They actually have the words, the sight words that kids need to know for the kindergarten playground. On the left, you'll see they go all the way down the classroom, and kids know, you know, when they're lining up to go home or whatever, to make sure they're on those. So they maintain, try to stay as much as possible 6 feet apart. Next slide. And then on their way home, they get a bag for lunch to eat for the day, and then breakfast for the following morning at school. Next slide. And this is just a few of our teachers and students, and they are so adorable. And I can tell you, they were just so happy to be back in school. It's been really since March to have a little bit of normalcy. And I think being back to school does bring hope to these kids, because in the homes that I've been to, a lot of them, the kids are really, really sad, and it's really hard to see. So this brought a lot of joy to my heart, and I'm sure a lot of teachers and principals as well. And so I want to just take this time, this was the last slide, to call on Mrs. Strickland, just to kind of let us know how her day, the day went at Rainy Valley in Cordova. Mrs. Strickland? Are you there?
Hi, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling on me. I'm actually really excited to get a chance to talk about how today went. It was like Christmas last night. I think I woke up every hour looking at my clock, like, okay, is it time to get up and get ready yet? We were just all really excited. And I have to say, there were some pictures of my schools and, you know, various schools throughout the district that Jolie shared. And I'm sure I speak for everyone when I say For sure at my schools, that was not all me. I mean, that sounds silly. It goes without saying, but it was a Herculean effort, by all of our staff. And Jolie showed our custodians with their sanitizing backpacks, and, teachers, secretaries, classified staff, everybody put in such a huge effort. And if you saw any of us today, you would have heard us say, this is the best day ever. And I think Gary said it's been 99 days since our last day in person, and it's probably one of the best days I've had in 99 days. And I wanted to just share a couple of things students said to me today. So I was talking with a second grader at Cordova today, at recess. And I said, okay, scale of 1 to 10, like, how excited are you to be back today? And he was like, 10 out of 10. I am so excited to be here. And I had another student, Jolie showed that they can play on the playground equipment. That was a game changer for us today, because the last time we were in person, California Department of Public Health hadn't changed that yet so that we could play on the playground equipment. And I was talking to some kids and they found out, like, oh my gosh, we can go play on that. And I think it was a first grader looked over at the monkey bars and she said, I have really been needing to get on those monkey bars. So she was really excited. And they just had the best time. We were able to do so many things that felt normal or typical. Like, we had PE, and kids had snack time and they played on the monkey bars. And they were just really excited to be there. And I think, you know, we watched that video earlier. They talked about it's the relationship, it's the connection. And we were able to get a little farther in that today. And it felt really good. I think that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mrs. Strickland. And then we have Jody Buddha. She was going to share just a little bit how things went today. Thanks, Jody.
Thank you, Jolie and JUSD board members, superintendent, Sina, cabinet, and audience for allowing some of the great things that Edgewater has been able to implement, and to share our day. So distance learning actually gave us a little bit of an opportunity to work on some of the things that we've been wanting to do around campus that we haven't been able to do, such as we created some of the pictures Jolie showed were the sensory paths. We didn't know when we first started this way back 9 days ago if we were able to use the play structure. And my thing was with these students come back, they have to be able to play. They have to be able to have a little bit of normalcy and working on social skills. So for our team, we really got together with a lot of the support staff and our absolutely wonderful librarian who is very artistic and hand-painted those activities on the blacktop. So very happy about that. We also were able to divide our fields up so each class would still be able to have field time. And then with the help of the STARS program, helped me create some of those activities and thinking outside the box of what they could do on a field if they weren't allowed to play with equipment, you know, balls, what kind of other games. So we laminated those activities and the directions, and those are actually taped onto the chains of the fields. Then some other activities that they can play have the whole bucket with the sanitation, some of the rules, and if there is a little marker or some whiteboards in there for some other activities, and then those are all sanitized after. We've also been able to do a track schedule so everyone that wants to use the track is able to use the track. We implemented with our new kindergarten playground a tricycle path so the kindergartners are able to use the tricycles. We have a sight word path that if you're going down the right direction to our kindergartner classroom, the sight words are able to be read. If you're going the wrong direction, the sight words are backwards. So that kind of just helps kindergartens remind them. We also were able to schedule brain breaks for all those students and the teachers so they can have that 10-minute break. And then what also really helped today, which was really fun to see, is the implementation of our valet service, our pickup and drop off valet service that we've implemented for our students. And so everyone at Edgewater today did an amazing job. So thank you for allowing me to share that. It really is the teamwork that makes the dream work. And it was just such a fun, refreshing. It was a lot of energy happening today. So thank you.
Thank you, Jody. And I just want to say one more thing. Randy Rasmussen, I absolutely love that video. Every time I see it, it is so true. We are so powerful as educators, and you see it every day with our kids. These educators put smiles on their faces, and they were just so happy. So, and educators in every sense. So that includes all the support staff as well. So thank you. And thank you, Mr. Cena, for allowing me to share.
No, thank you. And thank Heather and Jody too for helping us go through the first day of school and first of many. So slowing the spread of COVID-19, President Rasmussen mentioned tonight that today on COVID-19.ca.gov, every Tuesday by 1 o'clock, they update the case rates and the tiers. And we have our eye on the red tier, which today it's now 15.1 case rate. And so the magic number is 7. It has to get below 7, and it has to be there for a while before it's actually in the red tier. So slowing the spread, thank you to everyone for everything that each one of us is doing. Also, Trustee Crawford mentioned tonight about vaccinations, and we have, with the county's process for vaccinating, we have about 400 employees who meet the requirement of being 50 and above to and being educators, frontline workers, being able to be eligible to be vaccinated. And this past Saturday, we don't know quite how many, but a great many of our staff received their first dose. And we'll get some direction. The county office, I hadn't heard yet. I've been waiting to send out something tonight about whether they get the shipment of doses. There's been a problem on the east, you know, because of the weather. And so without that, I'll send out some direction tonight just so that people know and that we can, it's all part of slowing the spread that the California Department of Public Health recommends that all, it doesn't require, but recommends that all educators be vaccinated. In addition, I just want to thank everybody here about the Herculean effort. It really is. It's gang tackling for these 347 days trying to create this, really a whole new reality with new protocols. And then there were some speakers tonight who spoke of the depth of people having to tag team and pick up and fill gaps. And so no matter what our role, we're all contributing toward that. And we're all contributing because it all happens with the teacher and the student in the classroom. So thank you, and particularly the teachers who are working so hard to provide distance learning instruction and blended learning instruction, working as a site, working as a PLC, working as teams, working as individuals. Here tonight, there were 60 people on a training. So I appreciate all that teachers are doing, and administrators and paraeducators and support staff on staff, and our Ed Services team for doing all they can to facilitate learning. And next Monday, we'll start with, or we'll phase in grades 3 and 4. So it's all part of slowing the spread is this phase in. And then we have our eye on the red tier and the secondary schools coming up. So together, everybody working together, serving every student every day in every way. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Next, we have the approval of minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of 2/9/21. Is there any discussion regarding the minutes? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve the minutes.
Was that Doug Criddle?
Yes, sir.
Is there a second?
Second.
Randy Davis. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom? Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Griddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hastings?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Next, we have the consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that board members would like to have pulled? Not hearing any. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve tonight's agenda.
Second.
That, Mr. Crawford, and was that Ms. Hasty second? Okay. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. So next we have new business. New business for Board of Trustees. Vote for CSBA Delegate Assembly, Subregion 4-C. The purpose of the agenda item is to allow the board to nominate a representative for the CSBA Delegate Subregion 4C for a 2-year term, 4/1/21 to 3/31/23. So in the background information, it looks as though for our region, there has not been any nominations. In the past, for the past 10 years, Jim Fleury was our delegate representative. I talked to Jim and he wanted me to share with everybody that he's doing very well. So home doing very well. So are very happy for Jim. So what is a delegate assembly? Have a little paragraph here to read. CSBA's delegate assembly is a vital link in the association's governance structure. Working with local districts, county offices, the board of directors, executive committee, delegates ensure that the association reflects the interests of school districts and county office of education throughout the state. There are 2 required delegate assembly meetings each year. So it's 2 meetings, and it is other board members that they get together for these delegates and have an overseeing body. So it looks like we have actually an option to either select somebody or nominate somebody from our board or pass and not nominate anybody, not submit a ballot. So what's the pleasure of the board? Is there anybody that would be interested in wanting to be a delegate that we could nominate?
I'd be interested in serving in that.
Okay. We have Mr. Doug Criddle. Is there anyone else? So let's see.
If nobody else is interested, Mr. Rasmussen, I would make a motion to write in Mr. Criddle as our nomination.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Boom. We have a motion from Mr. Boom to write in Trustee Doug Criddle. Is there a second?
Second.
Ms. Hasty? Okay. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
And Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. So we'll do the paperwork, get that written in, and thank you very much for volunteering for that, Mr. Criddle.
Thank you, board. Appreciate it.
Next, we have Buildings and Grounds Department. Proposal with Dixon Smart Schoolhouse for the Covelot Elementary School Facility Feasibility Study. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the proposal with the Dixon Smart Schoolhouse for the Covelot Elementary School Facility Feasibility Study in the amount not to exceed $3,000. Mr. Barnett?
Yeah, good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. I'm pleased to bring this proposal to you guys today. Currently, Covelot School faces many challenges. And if anybody's been out there to see the school site, we're landlocked out there. There's a lot of code violations. Space is just inadequate during these COVID times. It's really uncovered a lot of deficiencies. Since I've come on board with the district over 5 years ago, Covelot has been a nonstop issue of trying to figure out how to address these issues. I've had architects out there, and they all kind of scratch their heads. So going through Dixon Smart Schoolhouse, kind of reached out to Joe Dixon. He's an advocate in the Coalition for Adequate Schools and Housing. He was a mentor of mine who's taught me over the years. Kind of picked his brain about it, and he was kind enough to offer his services for this this issue here we're having at Covelot in hopes that you guys approve his proposal this evening. What we're hoping to get out of this is a as much data as we can possibly gather, which has to do with the demographics of the area, the current conditions of the buildings, funding sources. So what Joe can help us do is he'll do an in-depth study specifically to Covelot of that entire site and kind of help us develop a plan that we can go ahead and move forward and bring to architects or come up with some funding sources to fix the issue. As we know, the front office of Covelot School is extremely small. They have no place for their staff in the front office. They don't really have space for kids. They're currently using a lot of classrooms. They're doubling up for different programs. And we're just landlocked out there. We can't really do much with the site. So we're hoping that with Smart Schoolhouse, with Joe Dixon, he'll be able to help us develop a plan and really come to you guys as the board with a solid game plan. And really what he does is he's going to help us find funding and really take an in-depth look at that. I have Mr. Joe Dixon on the line here as well, and I want to go ahead and have him introduce himself to the board and kind of share with you a little bit of his background. So Mr. Dixon, please go ahead.
Thanks, Travis. President Rasmussen, board, and superintendent, thanks for having me. I worked in two districts. I worked in Capistrano Unified when I was there. We built 31 schools in 24 years. Some people go, no way, but that's what we did. And then I went to Santa Ana Unified as the assistant superintendent. And we replaced 500 portable classrooms when I was there in 8 years with permanent, basically, for the most part, two-story classroom buildings. We needed to free up green space. A little bit more about myself. I was the chair of CASH, Coalition for Adequate School Housing. I was the chair of the Prop 51 campaign, if you remember that, in 2016, the $9 billion state bond. And I'm past chair of another group called the Californians for School Facilities, as a federal advocacy group. But I think what I can provide you is, as Travis explained, in Santa Ana, we had a $200 million bond. We were able to leverage that to over $500 million using federal, state, local funds, and other creative ways to do that. And also, you know, there's different construction delivery methods we can look at. So, I've been doing this a long time. I left Santa Ana in June of 2015, and I've been helping districts all up and down the state, and I'm currently helping a little tiny district in Butte County for free. It's called Berry Creek. They only have 59 students. It was burnt down in the complex fire in September. So I'm up there a lot, and I'd appreciate and enjoy working with y'all.
Thank you, Mr. Dixon. Board members, do you have any questions, comments? If not, yeah, I'll entertain a motion.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Problems is that they're landlocked. Would you be adding buildings to the Covalot complex, or would you be going up the two stories, or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so, and that's why we've kind of reached out to Mr. Joe Dixon. Ideally, I think what we're looking at is the portable classrooms out there are over 25 years old and they're deteriorating. You know, this is where this study would come in. Joe would assess it and really tell us, hey, you know, looking at the land, looking at the property, looking at the age of the buildings, looking at funding sources, he's going to kind of develop us a plan that says, here's how we should go and execute this. So if there's 13 portable classrooms out there that need to be removed and we're landlocked, it, like he was saying kind of briefly, a two-story building out there might be the option. You know, we have different funding sources out there right now. We've got CARES Act funding. So hopefully with the assistance of Joe and all his knowledge, he's going to put us together a package that says, look, here's the growth in the area. Here's your aging infrastructure. Here's how many students you have. Here's kind of a solution to your problem, because obviously, you know, there's a lot of things that play with facilities. So ideally, when we look at those portable classrooms out there, they're really aged. It would make sense to remove them. However, what's the cost going to be and how many classrooms do we need to replace? So that's kind of where Mr. Dixon's going to come in and really help us and say, you know, as a school district, here's your funding sources. Here's what I think's available. And you know, it basically lays it out for the board and the community to be able to make a rational decision. Because if obviously we know that we need to build at that site, we need to be able to justify that, whether it's growth or failing infrastructure. But we do know that since I started 5.5 years ago, Covalot has always, every year has come up on the radar with not enough space and failing infrastructure. So it's just time that we take the bull by the horns and do something about it with data rather than just kind of admire the problem. So that's why we're bringing it forward today, so we can really take an educated stab at this and come up with a plan to meet the needs of our students in education.
If SiteLogic is putting in solar panels and doing some other things, I don't want to do something that we're going to have undone.
Absolutely. And so that goes into Joe's study. He will take into account the projects at that site. So we're not what you're saying is not duplicating effort. So definitely when it comes to those type of things, that will be included in his study when it comes back. Definitely we would not duplicate efforts. I'm really good about keeping my teams on the same page and having meetings with multiple projects. So, and that kind of goes hand in hand with the Arboga project, because obviously we have solar out there and we have a project kicking off. So I've merged the two, core construction and site project there as well to meet. So we're all on the same page. So there's no duplicating efforts.
Good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other comments or questions?
Yeah, Mr. Rasmussen, one quick comment.
Yeah.
Mr. Dixon, you're to be commended for your work helping Berry Creek out. That community was devastated, and that's awful nice of you to donate your time up there. You're to be commended for that. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Crawford. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boone?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries 7 yes. Thank you, Mr. Dixon.
Thank you.
Next, we have Personnel Services, Resolution 2020-21/19, elimination of classified staff due to elimination of particular kinds of service. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution entitled Elimination of Classified Staff Due to Elimination of Particular Kinds of Service. Mr. Carrion.
Yes, thank you, President Rasmussen. I want to preface this particular item by addressing a little red face that, rather red face, that I sent a communication to bring attention and awareness to the particular kinds of service elimination process. process, misstatement and in error there that most employees would likely not return. I don't know if some of you saw that, but I want to correct that by saying that most employees subject to would likely return. So I'll say that again here in a few minutes, but ultimately what I want to bring attention to here is that the elimination of classified services due to a particular kind of service list is usually subject to lack of funds or lack of work. And it isn't so much that we're lacking work, as all of you know, and certainly the personnel department has scoured various areas of our community and casting wide nets to find people that are willing to provide service in this pandemic time, and service in general for various positions, short hour, long hour, in trying to ensure that our students get the best service available. All of that said, when there is not a significant assurance of funding, and it isn't that there isn't some funding, but in total funding, in order to sustain the delivery of the service level, we have to, out of an abundance of caution, ultimately bring forward an elimination of service lists such as this one. This list provides for FTEs in lower amounts than we've had in years, perhaps a decade, which is a good thing. But again, it's in an abundance of caution. We have sites that do not have assurances of site funds at the same levels that originally created positions for the service levels in place. The hope is that through the dissemination of information and ultimately going through processes of approving for positions and service levels to be retained through site council and school involvement of its staff, that ultimately these positions will be reinstated before the end of the school year, and those subject to the layoff would ultimately receive rescission notices. I'm pretty confident that's likely to happen. Ultimately, too, should this be voted on and passed, it would allow for staff to deliver notices in accordance to the 60-day statute and provide school sites opportunities to plan accordingly. Again, the expectation, the hope, is that all of those affected by this elimination list would be retained in some way, shape, or form. We do have ultimately to seek opportunities for every employee that we can find and is willing to work in order to sustain the service level that we want and our students deserve. So all of that said, we'd like to recommend that the board, in an abundance of caution, approve the resolution so that we can notice employees affected by this list and affected by the elimination of the positions in a timely manner, while ensuring and working with the sites to find funding in a way that they could retain and or reinstate positions in order to deliver rescissions as quickly as we can.
Thank you, Mr. Carrion. Board members, do we have comments or questions? So, Mr. Carrion, I do know this is an annual process that we go through, but it certainly does not seem like this is a very, very common year that we're looking at right now. And, as we heard earlier, and I think other board meetings, one of the areas that really bothers me is these paraeducators. When we're looking at 3.3 FTE, my assumption is that's six or seven personnel, maybe. And just trying to find folks, or those paraeducators have been on our frontline service of providing service to students. And I don't know how many paraeducators we have in the district, Mr. Perrion. Can you, do we have 50? I don't know.
It's probably in the low hundreds.
Low hundreds?
Yes. We have quite a few, most of them in the special education environment. Oh. Those that are not in special ed environments are usually state funded. And when we consider the application of district funds or other sources to retain the services, we run the risk of ultimately creating a supplanting issue when sites would prefer to use or need to use categorical dollars or targeted dollars. And when we set up that structure where the district is funding partial positions, not that it's not a bad idea, but ultimately we want to secure the flexibility of not creating a supplant versus supplement situation.
So when we talk about this, we talk about we're reducing positions. We're not really reducing people, but it's the positions. So I guess I'm thinking at a school site, if we have three paraeducators at this particular site that is not funded, then we have three less paraeducators at that site. Would that be accurate?
That's accurate. That's accurate in terms of what the picture provides for now. It gives, through this process, it gives school sites an opportunity to secure the funding, to ensure that their budgeted plan and school site plans are in order once receiving the concrete information relative to how much they're going to receive through federal funds and other state, potentially other state categorical funds, as that seems to be possible reality in the future.
I certainly understand the process. It just seemed like this, you know, today we need every body that has had a connection with a school site to try to help out at those school sites. And I guess we're looking at this for next year. I guess they're still going to be there for the remainder of this particular year. But
that's correct. And as I alluded to earlier, there's a very, very great likelihood that they will be reinstated.
Thank you.
It's unfortunate that it's just the where the process is. It's February, and in February, sites get they're getting a collection of their money, their FTEs, their data to work with and plan for next year, but haven't been able to discern or determine for sure that bringing these positions back. The problem is the timeline is working so that it's, as Mr. Carrion said, it's an abundance of caution that this be done, unfortunately, but, so that timing can be determined.
I would just hope that again, like you say, we normally get to hire most all these folks back, but if a situation came up at school site, say school site A, and again, maybe even if it was a student support specialist and for some reason that site didn't get X amount of dollars from however they're funding that, but it still is a very needed position. If the money is not coming in from the categorical fund, but the position is felt through the district and the site that is needed, if we funded that some other way, I don't think that would be supplanting then, right?
In and of itself, no, it would not be supplanting. It would, however, potentially set up the concept for supplanting in the future.
Right.
When the district funds using general funds or other available resources, then the next time that school site goes to fund its employees above and beyond that level, we have to be careful that it's not a supplanting situation.
Yeah. Thank you again. Any other questions or comments?
Yeah, Gary Criddle, I'd like to make just a quick comment. I think parent educators are very, very important to have. I spent some time as a parent educator myself, so I kind of know what it's like. And this is just a general comment. I'm hoping that the board can explore some kind of outside of the box solution. We're in short supply of substitute teachers. So for a parent educator, if they're not going to have a position, if there's any possibility that the district can apply or have some kind of waiver in place that makes a parent educator possible to go in and actually be a substitute for a day within a classroom and maybe give these people some kind of preference in calling them when we need a sub. They already are on file in the district office, so to speak, so why not utilize them as a resource when we need substitute teachers? That's just something just popped into my head, so thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Gary Criddle, thank you for your comments. We are exploring every opportunity to determine which paraeducators might be sufficiently qualified, and the district would endorse and support their candidacy to receive a 30-day substitute teaching credential. There's also the opportunity in many situations where a paraeducator may be, for lack of a better word, interjected or inserted into a substitute teacher service under the credential of the school administrator, in which case, in those opportunities, those paraeducators would be paid out of FBOS pay in accordance to their contract. I've had conversations with the CSA labor rep and the chapter president of the same, and they are on board, and they're very cooperative in this situation to ensure that those that are willing can support our endeavor as best we can. Ultimately, as maybe some of you have seen, we're always looking for paraeducators. It's just a matter of securing the funding and then restating those that have received the decision notices. It is about the timeline, and it's about ensuring that we meet the statute according to the timeline. As a side note, legislation is currently going into consideration being proposed that classified employees receive the same deadline notification of all certificated employees. So that may be around the corner. But for us, this has been our practice. We've been doing it in February for years, which is a good thing. It provides for advanced notification for our employees who seek to do other things if necessary. And we make sure that we are emotionally supporting them throughout this process and ensuring that we provide decisions as quickly as we can.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other comments, questions? I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Was that Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Yes, motion to approve.
Thank you. Have a motion to approve by Mr. Davis. Is there a second?
Second, Jeff Boom.
Okay, thank you, Jeff Boom. Roll call vote. Randy Davis.
Yes.
Frank Cropper.
Yes.
Jeff Boom.
Yes.
Doug Criddle.
Yes.
Trustee Hasty.
Yes.
Gary Criddle.
Yes.
And Rasmussen is no. Item number two, personnel services. Board policy 1312.1, uniform complaint procedures. Purpose of the agenda item. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing regarding the revisions to board policy 1312.3, uniform complaint procedures, UCP. Public hearing is now open. Do we have Mr. Carrion? Are you going to speak to this? Or, okay.
Yes, thank you once again. Through this opportunity to public hearing scenario, simply want to bring the attention to the revision of this board policy 1312.3. It brings us into compliance with what has been strongly recommended by the California School Board Association that encompasses and incorporates any new legislation, any new requirements, any new protection, any new assurances to our programs that are both federally funded, state funded, and in essence, overall categorically funded, and while also including nutritional services and securing the protections of students and parents to an equitable learning environment. It isn't that we're out of compliance necessarily, it's just simply updating so that we stay in compliance. And we want to make sure that through this revision, any new legislation has adequately been incorporated, and to ensure that any families and students and teachers, anybody that felt that perhaps there was a disparate treatment in accordance to our programs, that we have every opportunity to lodge those concerns, and the board would, through its direction of the superintendent and or his designees, would investigate it and follow up in accordance with the laws. Again, want to reiterate that it's about retaining and staying in compliance. There are new laws all the time, good, bad, or indifferent, and unfortunately, it may require yet another update at some point. You never know. This has been updated rather frequently, as recommended by the California School Board Association, as you may recall. And wouldn't surprise me that by the end of the summer, we're looking at another revision in accordance with this board policy 1312.3. All that said, when we get to that point, I'll make the recommendation that the board approve it and bring us up to compliance through this renewed board policy.
Thank you, Mr. Carrion. Any other discussion? Board members? Public? Not hearing any. Is there a motion to close the public hearing?
Motion to close.
Motion to close by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Doug Griddle. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom? Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Okay. Trustee Doug Griddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Griddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries. Now is there a motion regarding the revisions to board policy 1312.3?
Motion to approve the revisions.
Motion to approve the revision by Mr. Boom. Is there a second?
Second.
What was that?
I think it's Randy Davis.
Randy Davis. Second by Randy Davis. Okay, roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Griddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Griddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries 7 yes. Looks like the last agenda item. I would like to, again, just thank Director Critchfield, Ms. Strickland, and Ms. Buddha for being able to give us that presentation, and Mr. Sina for putting that together for us. It was great to get to see those school sites and kids. So again, thank you for our community for allowing us to get that case rate down, 15.1. Our sights are set on 7. Thank you very much. Have a good night. Meeting adjourned.